Memorial Day doorbuster deals are here at Lowe's. Right now, rewards members save $80 on the Master Forge 4-burner gas grill, now just $149. Plus, rewards members save $900 on the Lowe's exclusive Hisense French door refrigerator, now only $999. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Programs subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show, episode 947 of I Doubt It Podcast. I am your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and scholarly Brittany Page, everyone.
So we're going to start the show today on a little bit of a sad note, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that is because we got some news that a very long-time listener, very long-time supporter of the show has passed away. And some of the listeners out there may know him, Jack Schwend, also known as Elfman Jack, and we'll get to why in a moment. But he, like I said, longtime listener, longtime supporter. He was often on our old hangout calls. So if you used to do the hangout calls with us, you may remember Jack. And, you know, he was an older guy. He was retired. He was very anti-Trump. He was very politically active. He dedicated a lot of his time to educating himself and continuing to be in the fight against the Trump administration.
Spent many years in the Air Force. May have been retired from the Air Force, but many, many years service in the Air Force.
Yeah. Just a very kind, compassionate, very funny.
Very funny guy.
Yeah, funny, witty, just a great guy.
And the news, and when you do something like this that we have for as long as we have, and a community builds up around something like this, invariably you're going to have members of the community pass away, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. Many of you who've been around a long time will remember Nikki, mm-hmm, from the Netherlands,
right?
Who died of cancer. Mm-hmm. It was a very hard blow to a lot of people who knew and loved her. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for Jack, who was an integral part of this show and just a wonderful, creative, just fucking an awesome, awesome guy. I mean, if you remember, we've taken pictures of the Christmas ornaments that he made.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, at this point, I mean, every year he sent us new ones. We have dozens of them.
Yep.
And we will cherish them fondly. Mm-hmm. And it'll always bring a smile every Christmas when we break those out, because he was so important and so special.
Yeah, and that's how he got the name Elfman Jack, is he had these very ornate elf figurines that he would create. And it wasn't just something that he did during Christmas time. This was a year-round hobby where he was always making these elves. And I remember early on we were like, hey, Jack, do you want us to like try to help you sell these or like put something together so that like we can make this profitable for you?
He was not interested.
Yeah, he's like, no, this is just my hobby. I like to do it. And he would send them as gifts to people. And they were really remarkable. So, yeah, we will definitely always remember him through his elves. But the final message that that got posted on his Facebook page is this. On May 7th, 2025, I passed on. To all who knew me, farewell. To those I followed, keep up the good work. I was hospitalized since April 7th with repeat pneumonia, which sadly revealed itself as stage 4 inoperable pancreatic cancer. I chose to go on to comfort care and passed less than 9 hours later. I will be cremated and then transferred back east to be scattered in a place that myself and my brother discussed. This is being prepared by my friend Bob, who supported me to the end and will adopt my loved cat, Buddy. Peace to you all during these trying times. The phone will be going silent.
Yeah. It is, it's tough. It strikes me particularly because having faced cancer and faced death, we had a lot of conversations about how if something was to have happened and there was like, should I record a video or, and I like that this was written by him before going, and he faced it down and wanted to, the encouragement there at the end of acknowledging the place we are in America and still being resistant to that in death is just, for me, pretty fucking great. And it really is, it exemplifies who and what Jack was in life, that he wasn't going to sit down and take it. He was going to resist. And it really speaks to who he was. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were able to exchange one last message with him after he posted the update that he had received his diagnosis. And yeah, he seemed to have really accepted it. I mean, his final post about it was like, live and enjoy your lives. You know,
yeah.
It was almost like, I've accepted what the terms are here and I'm moving forward. So I think, you know, Jack would want us all to continue fighting. And he, you know, if you scroll through his Facebook page, he is an adamant anti-Trump resistance. He's all in.
I would say cantankerous, but cantankerous brings with it like imagery of like an old, old man. And while he was old,
yeah,
he didn't come across as like, get off my lawn. He wasn't like that.
Yeah,
he was just fucking great.
Yes.
He was really great, very special. And we will miss you, Jack.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people who love you, or loved you, and I guess still do.
Yeah.
And we appreciate every contribution that Jack made to this show, and we hope you did too.
Yes. We do have another listener-related thing that is happier, we will say. So we'll kind of transition from this sad moment. And you...
Also, let's say this. If you have memories of Jack...
Oh, yes, yes.
For sure, call in, because we would love to share...
Absolutely.
...in any memory you have of Jack, whether it be from the Hangouts or from his contribution to the show. 657-464-7609. And, of course, email idoubtit@dollamore.com.
Right. So... your best friend wrote a book, and we actually haven't talked about it on the show yet, The Grateful Child.
Brett number one.
And for those of you who have been around that long, you will remember he was also the one who almost died in Scotland.
Yeah.
And so he
Life had, is fragile, man.
Yeah. Speaking of death, so he had almost died in Scotland, and he's doing much better now, and he's... an author now. He's a published author. He has this book, and it was actually illustrated by a longtime listener, longtime supporter of the show, Leah Farsheet, who is super talented. I mean, just an amazingly talented artist. And
I take it as a personal insult to me that she's so talented, because it just rubs in my face and reminds me of what a talentless clod I am constantly.
Yeah.
Opening the book is just, it's just a constant reminder and an insult personally to me every time I look at the book, which is a lot.
Yeah. Well, and you wrote the foreword for the book, of course, and it is for sale now on our website, on Amazon, anywhere you get books. And so we'll link to it.
It really is a beautiful children's book that's not, we've kind of tossed around the phrase that it's an adult book for children and a children's book for adults. And it really is. It is a celebration of gratitude, of the little things that we oftentimes take for granted and don't appreciate. It's really very beautiful, and we are happy to have any role whatsoever in bringing it to the public.
Yeah, and again, we thought about, like, who would we have illustrate this book? And I think Leah was, like, the only person that we entertained, because it was, well, number one, she's been a longtime listener, longtime supporter, and I think she's, like, a self-taught artist, too, and she has this tremendous following on Instagram because she's so talented. So we're definitely going to link to her Instagram below as well, but she's at Lee Does Doodles, L-E-L-E Does Doodles on Instagram, and... So it's great that a member of the listener community was able to be involved in the project.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think the book is a really positive message, and we try to do that on the show with like the Taking Care of Biz segment, which we have a really good one today. And I think the book kind of fits with that message of us not always trying to dwell on the terror and chaos that is happening
that
around
it,
us.
That it absolutely does exist. It's not ignoring that it exists, but it's a little respite from it.
Yeah, that's why I said, like, we don't want to dwell on it, right? We don't want to constantly be thinking about it, and so it's nice to have those moments where, like, oh, yes, other things are also happening.
That's right.
That's good. That's good.
So if you want to check that out and just, you know, get a look at some of the pages of the book, you can go to dollamore.com, and it's there, but it's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Walmart and everywhere else that you buy books. The Grateful Child.
Right. All right. So we want to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters right now. So we want to give a shout out to our new Patreon supporters, Jesse J.
Jesse J. Great name.
Lori H.
Lori H.
Jeff.
Jeff.
Sarah M.
Sarah M.
Sandra S.
Sandra S.
Cindy.
Cindy.
Sharon H.
Sharon H.
Jennifer F.
Jennifer F.
Pamela G.
Pamela G.
Sandy.
Sandy.
Kenneth W. M.
Kenneth W. M.
Miroslav N.
Miroslav N.
Sandy L.
Sandy L.
Unbreakable Leo.
Unbreakable Leo.
Rex R.
Rex R.
Matt S.
Matt S.
Everyday Watcher.
Everyday Watcher. I don't know if that's a watch fan or a voyeur.
Well, you would be confused about that given your obsession with watch videos right now.
I am going through a thing with the watch videos.
Yeah. Melly R.
We should talk about that sometime.
Melly R.
Melly R.
Andrew B.
Andrew B.
LL.
LL.
Denise C.
Denise C.
Karen U.
Karen U.
And Tim E.
Tim E. Thank you all so much. We appreciate your support of the show and ongoing helping us. You know, we are over 11 years now at this effort, and we're loving it. We love you guys so much.
Yes. Yeah, so be sure to call and give your thoughts on any topics we talk about in this episode or in previous episodes, 657-464-7609 or idoubtit@dollamore.com. See, what happens is I cry and then I'm constantly trying to recover from that.
Your throat constricts and then it's like...
Yeah, and now
You sound like RFK right now.
No, please. Don't.
You do.
It's just
do.
Another opportunity for you to show off how good your impression is. I
I'm
know
not
that
doing
you're going
to I'm not doing it.
You're He's going to do it, guys. Okay. So, you can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast to support us if you would like to, and now we are going to get into the show.
Memorial Day doorbuster deals are here at Lowe's. Right now, rewards members save $80 on the Master Forge 4-burner gas grill. Now just $149. Plus, rewards members save $900 on the Lowe's exclusive Hisense French door refrigerator. Now only $9.99. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 5/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Programs subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Dollamocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So House Republicans passed a horrible bill that they keep calling something that I think that we should all collectively agree to stop calling
It very much bothers me that the media just jumps on board with the big blah, 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 blah. Shut the fuck up. Quit nicknaming it the thing that they want it to be nicknamed.
Yeah, like I was watching, I think it was Face the Nation this morning with Margaret. Is that the one hosted by Margaret Brennan? And she said it it's the phrase, it's the alliteration in the word.
We'll just say it once.
Okay.
They're calling it, these dipshits in the Republican Party and the media, the dipshits are calling it the Big Beautiful Bill.
And I think it is a huge disservice to the American people, because rather than using your platform and unique ability to educate and influence millions of Americans with these prime time slots
and
on
communicate
TV,
facts and reality.
Yeah, you're missing an opportunity to actually inform Americans about what this bill does. And you're using Donald Trump's phrase, you're using the Republicans' phrase to sell it to the American
right.
people. And
rather than just not take part in propagandizing what is insanely destructive.
Yeah. So it's disturbing in many different ways, particularly because of the damage that this is going to do. And obviously the House Republican, tax portion of this is skewed toward the wealthy. They're going to be extending the 2017 tax cuts, Trump tax cuts that are skewed toward the wealthy, overwhelmingly benefit the wealthy. They are going to be taking health care and food assistance away from millions of people in order to pay for these tax cuts for the wealthy. And rather, like, again, instead of using their opportunity that they have to educate people about this, they're not really going hard on that element. Now, House Speaker Mike Johnson went on with CNN's Jake Tapper, who, of course, has been making the rounds selling his book.
Yeah, yeah.
His book with Axios's Alex Thompson about
CNN. Excuse me. Wow, that was crazy. I've been sick, by the way, everybody, as you can tell. By the way, that wasn't my RFK impersonation. That was just my voice failing.
Wow.
I have a bad throat sometimes.
No, I think he said all the time. Always.
All the time. CNN at this point is just like fucking QVC for his goddamn book.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gross.
Yeah, and again, the book is about the media, essentially, or the media and the people around Joe Biden and Joe Biden covering up his cognitive decline.
Yeah, which, by the way, there's a degree of truth to all of that, sure. But the house is on fire, dude. Let's not worry about the drapes. The fucking house is on fire.
Yeah, here's what else bothers me about it is, like, he went on Megyn Kelly's show, Jake Tapper, to talk about the book. And one of the things that he said on Megyn Kelly's show is that he called Laura Trump, Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, married to Eric Trump, to apologize to her because she was right about Joe Biden. And I'm like, here's the thing. All these conservatives and, like, Cenk Uygur who are out here saying, I was right. I was out here saying that he had a cognitive decline, whatever, whatever. You didn't have information. You didn't have evidence for that. That was motivated reasoning on your part. That was, like, looking at him having these moments of, like, frailty and whatever. And then you extrapolated from that and went your own way with it. But, like, you didn't have evidence for that
right.
belief. Now you're saying, oh, look at this book.
And also, he wasn't so impaired to not do the job. He's just in declining years. That's why we don't want octogenarians being president of the United States. You didn't break any fucking news, Jake Tapper, Alex Thompson.
And there's also this question of, like, does there need to be this reckoning of the Democratic Party? Yeah, there always needs to be a reckoning of the Democratic Party. They're always doing things wrong. We always want them to be reckoning with the things
yes.
that they're doing wrong. Please, you're acting like the public doesn't want that. You're acting like we are not pressuring the Democrats to do that.
What they're setting themselves up to do is to whoever ends up being the nominee or seek the nomination next time is like, what role did you play in Joe Biden? Shut the fuck up. Let's come on. Let's save the Republic here. That's the situation we're in.
Yeah. So the other element of the House Republicans passing the reconciliation bill that's now going to go to the Senate and be a battle in the Senate. We'll get to that in a moment. Is they are talking about how they're cutting quote unquote waste, fraud, and abuse by implementing work requirements that are going to kick millions of people off of Medicaid. And Jake Tapper did ask Mike Johnson about this. I don't think that he.
Is this the segment where he lets him filibuster and doesn't try to interject and try to counteract the lies and propaganda and disinformation that he's spewing?
Is this the segment where that happens, or is that, like, that's just
another segment?
That's just when that happens
yeah.
all the time. So yeah, this is an example of that exactly happening.
So 1.4 million people in your home state of Louisiana are on Medicaid. More than 800,000 receive SNAP benefits, also known as food stamps. Is it your contention that if any of those Louisianans lose their benefits, it's because they shouldn't have been receiving them because they were committing waste, fraud, or abuse.
Yeah, look, my district, as every district in America, has people who are on the program who shouldn't. And when you're talking about, I keep using this example, a young able-bodied man with no dependents, there's no reason he should not be working. We are the party about that supports human dignity, and we find purpose and dignity in our work. It's good for the individuals involved. It's good for their community. It's good for society at large. When you're talking about work requirements, by the way, it's very flexible. It just means that you either work or you volunteer, do something meaningful in your community, or you're in a job or work training program. 20 hours a week. I mean, this is not some huge demand. If you're going to be on the public wagon, you have to do something to help pull it if you're able. And again, Jake, the purpose of this is to preserve these very necessary, very important safety net programs for the people who actually need and deserve them and not those who are gaming the system. And I think I'll go into any town hall anywhere in America, my district or otherwise, and explain this, and everyone nods in agreement and understands it. So the Democrats are trying to twist the facts. They're trying to put out misinformation because they're going to vote against this, and there's no way to defend it. What it means is they're going to be voting for more fraud, waste, and abuse instead of the elimination of it, which is what our package does.
It's not just Democrats, though, right? I mean, there are voices in MAGA world sounding the alarm that cuts to Medicaid could really impact Trump's own supporters. Take a listen.
Medicaid, you got to be careful because a lot of MAGA's on Medicaid. I'm telling you, if you don't think so, you are dead wrong. Just can't take a Medex to it, although I would love to.
This is real Medicaid benefit cuts. I can't support that. No Republican should support that. We're the party of the working class, Manu. We need to act like it.
That was Steve Bannon and Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. What is your response to them?
Yeah, look, I don't disagree with that. Of course, there's lots of people on Medicaid and in our party and in others. But we're, again, if they look at the final package and the details of what has come through the House, I think we reached the right point. And Jake, it also brings up the very important point that we're trying to do this on a very aggressive timetable. The reason I tried to get this done, we did get it done before Memorial Day and send it to the Senate, is so the president can be signing this into law by Independence Day on July 4th.
You know what shocks me?
That was kind of an honest answer at the end.
Yeah, it's nakedly political, though. Even the questions being framed about, you're going to hurt your own voters. It's not about you're going to hurt Americans.
Right.
They're putting front and center the most important aspect of this. You're going to hurt other Republicans. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what's most important here. It's that you're going to be hurting American people. You're going to be hurting people who need the assistance from Medicaid.
Right. I have so much to say about work requirements that I'm trying to find my way and my order here. So the first thing that I would say is research consistently finds that work requirements do not increase participation in the labor force and instead act as red tape to prevent people from accessing programs that they desperately need.
They end up making the program more expensive to operate, mm-hmm. which is waste.
Right.
Could be considered abuse, or some may say fraud.
I will jump to that in a moment, particularly about Deloitte, so don't let me forget. But the research also shows that most people on Medicaid are already working or meet an exemption. And all of this is based on the false accusation, the stereotype that, you know, is based on racism, that's based on classism, that they look at poor people and they say, you want to be lazy. You're choosing to be poor. And so we need to, like, you know, have you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and really get involved here because you just want to be lazy and lay around and, like, live off Medicaid. Like, no one can live off Medicaid. Well, I don't understand.
What they do oftentimes is they appeal to someone, their base, like, what they think is common sense. Like, they say, well, you know, able-bodied people who can work shouldn't be on Medicaid.
Right.
Well, there's an easy answer to that.
Right.
That it's not that people don't want to work. It's just some 21-year-old dude playing video games, like some Republican said last week or 2 weeks ago.
Right.
These are people who are caring for people who need a caretaker.
Right. Again, and that's someone who would meet an exemption. So they keep acting like there are millions of people who are just, like, getting free health care and not working, and they're not working so they can get free health care.
Right.
But, like, you don't have other monies. Like, how are you sustaining that? Like,
you know, they're living in the high life. Yeah. You know, Medicaid, you can live lavishly on Medicaid. Yeah. It's very, very liberal program, Brittany.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And there's specific examples where this has already failed. In Arkansas is one example. Georgia is one example. There are people who are...
You mean appending work requirements to Medicaid?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in states where they have already done that and it has failed. And Arkansas is an example. Georgia is an example. Here's part of what happens with this is people who are... who qualify for an exemption, they will not always be shielded from losing coverage. So people who are not supposed to lose their coverage will end up losing their coverage yeah. because of the requirements. But in Georgia, for example, they created this Pathways to Coverage is what they called it. And they have paid Deloitte $51 million to manage the program, create and maintain the software platform for yeah. the program. For
Deloitte's another consultancy like McKinsey.
Yeah, so they've paid out over $50 million for this effort. And as it stands now, less than 3% of the approximately 250,000 Georgians eligible for the program are enrolled in the program.
Yeah.
Less than 3%. That's according to reporting from ProPublica. So they've paid all this money to implement this work requirement program, and it instead has just stripped
yeah.
healthcare coverage from people, and they're not able to get back on their healthcare coverage.
Because when they spend that $51 million to Deloitte, you know who doesn't get that $51 million? People who need that money desperately to survive and live even mildly comfortable lives.
Right. And so I would also take, like they played that clip of Steve Bannon, they played that clip of Josh Hawley.
Yeah, that's subterfuge. That's mm-hmm. a distraction. Josh Hawley right now is really getting the benefit of a guy who's really standing up for Medicaid when no, the fuck he's not. He's absolutely for work requirements.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, "Don't Cut Medicaid," and in it he said, "Slashing health insurance for the working poor, the argument is both morally wrong and politically suicidal." But the thing is, if you do listen to him give interviews, he says, "I'm against cutting Medicaid. I'm for work requirements in Medicaid," which, again,
is cutting Medicaid
right.
in every instance across the board when states do it, like you just said, Arkansas and Georgia.
Right. And so you're just getting a different version. You're phrasing it differently. You're
right.
cutting Medicaid. And that is the
thing. And the media is letting them get away with this fucking propagandizing and disinformation campaign. They're letting
right.
they're aiding them in this.
And it's more of what the Republicans do. They have this tactic where they point to some other demographic and they say, "These are the people who are getting all the benefits, and they're taking it away from you."
Yeah, things would be so much better for you on Medicaid if it wasn't for these fucking fraudsters and wasters and abusers.
Right. Instead of acknowledging that the benefits are going to be given to the rich people, the wealthiest people in this country. And they
even in this case, people who work at Deloitte.
Yeah, they don't want to talk about any of that, okay? The other element of this is that Republicans love to talk about how they are, you know, fiscal hawks. They're really concerned about the debt. They're really concerned about the deficit. And they're seemingly not so worried about that now because there are various estimates here in terms of how much this bill is going to add to the deficit.
I've heard five different independent organizations, both government and private, have scored this bill. And that anywhere from $2 to $5 trillion will be added to the debt over the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I have seen somewhere around $4 trillion yeah. is kind of the average that I've seen for the estimates. But again, this is where the fight is going to come in. So this bill now goes to the Senate. And Mike Johnson is saying, "Hey, we're trying to tell the Senate, like, don't change too much of this. Just kind of yeah. leave it as is." And Republicans in the Senate, like Ron Johnson coming up here next, is like, "No, we're going to change quite a bit here," because he has people to worry about, like
right.
Rand Paul and people who are actually concerned about deficit spending.
Yeah. Also keep this in mind, that when Ron Johnson, who's not a moderate Republican, he's not a Susan Collins who's concerned about everything, he's not a Lisa Murkowski, he is absolutely a hard right-wing conspiracy theory insurrectionist type. And if he is worried, this bill in its current form, my prediction is, it's dead on arrival. There's no way they're going to pass this. It's going to be it's going to have to be fiddled with, even if it's going to get passed at all.
President Trump has suggested that the debt is not really top of mind of his concerns. He wants Republicans to fall in line. He wants Republicans to pass the bill. You told CNN, quote, somebody's got to be the dad that says, I know y'all want to go to Disney World, but we can't afford it. I guess I'm going to be that guy, unquote. So how determined are you to be that guy if it actually means telling President Trump you are going to vote against the bill and you're going to try to get other Republican senators to join you unless there are major, major changes?
Well, in 2010, I sprang out of the Tea Party movement, and as I did parades, I would shout, this is a fight for freedom. We are mortgaging our children's future. It's wrong. It's immoral. It has to stop. I haven't changed. My campaign promise in 2010 and every campaign after that was to stop mortgaging our children's future. It's immoral. It's wrong. It has to stop. And so he may not be worried about that. I am extremely worried about that. That is my primary goal running for Congress. This is our moment. We've witnessed.
I'm pausing it there. Immediately interjected should be Jake Tapper saying, where were you when Donald Trump added nearly $8 trillion to the debt during his first term in just 4 years? Where were you then? Because it's crickets from the fucking peanut gallery. They were nowhere. They egged him on. They bolstered his effort. They created the tax cut situation that now they're trying to make permanent or extend. And it's only going to add more debt. And all of these deficit hawks, they're just liars.
An unprecedented level of increased spending, 58% since 2019, other than World War II. This is our only chance to reset that to a reasonable pre-pandemic level of spending. And again, I think you can do it, and the spending that we would eliminate, people wouldn't even notice. But you have to do the work, which takes time. That's part of the process. Part of the problem here is we've rushed this process. We haven't taken the time. We've done the same old way, exempt most programs, take a look at a couple, tweak them a little bit, try and rely on a CBO score, and then have that score completely out of context with anything that really we ought to be talking about, like the $22 trillion of additional deficit over the next 10 years.
So we're out of time, but I'm just wondering if you could just give me a number. How many other Republican senators do you think share your concerns and are willing to make major changes to this bill?
I think we have enough to stop the process until the president gets serious about spending reduction and reducing the deficit.
And so all of this is an opportunity for everyone listening to this to continue to pressure their elected officials, to continue to call, harass, make sure that your voice is heard about these
202-224-3121. Again, 202-224-3121. That's the Capitol switchboard.
Because Mike Johnson in the previous clip, I ended it there for a reason, said that his ambitious timeline is to get all this through Independence Day, July 4th. And so there's going to be an uphill battle here. I mean, I know that everyone feels hopeless, but the reason that you're starting to see Republicans come out and signal their fears about Medicaid, even if they're doing doublespeak, is because they know that cutting Medicaid is going to be a political liability. That's why, in that previous clip, Jake Tapper is talking about the political consequences. Yeah. Because if they can't be pressured into doing the right thing for moral reasons, they can certainly be pressured into doing the right thing because they're fearful of losing their power and the political consequences of causing pain to millions of Americans.
And we need to make every one of these people live in fear of joblessness.
And I want to talk just about a few other elements of this, because I haven't heard the mainstream media talk about the tax element of this. And according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, in this bill, the top 1% of people would receive tax cuts three times the size of those for people with incomes in the bottom 60%.
Yeah.
So the top 0.6% of people, the 1.2 million people with annual incomes over 1 million would receive more total tax cuts than the 127 million people with incomes below 100,000.
That needs to be repeated. Say that again. I mean, seriously, that's insane and stark.
the top 0.6% of people, the 1.2 million people with annual incomes above 1 million.
So just 1.2 million people, their tax increase, their tax decrease.
Would receive more total tax cuts than 127 million people who have incomes below $100,000.
Wow.
So this is significant. This is...
So tell me again, Josh Hawley, sorry. Tell me again, Josh Hawley, about how we're the party of the working man. We're the party of the working class. No, you're not.
No, no.
Absolutely not.
No, no, no. And that's why it's so disappointing when I see these various interviews that they did on these Sunday morning shows. You know...
When the hosts come unprepared.
You know what? Do you know what Meet the Press opened their show with today?
No, I do not. I don't know that I want to know.
The crisis.
La 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 la. A la la.
And listen, this is an important issue. The mental health of young people, like the loneliness epidemic, that's what they led with, though.
Yeah.
When all of this is going on.
Also hard to tackle the loneliness epidemic from a governmental standpoint if you don't have the funds or the motivation to do so.
Yeah, I mean, and they could at least talk about how they're cutting government programs that, like, address the suicide hotline for LGBTQ people.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, come on now. Like, there's important things happening here. I know that's important, too, but, like, this is crisis time.
Yes.
And this is the time to educate the American public about what they can be doing to pressure their elected officials.
Yeah, again, it's the same deal with the Biden book, the Jake Tapper and Alec Thompson's Biden book. Yeah, of course, that's something that we need to think about. But it doesn't need to be lead every segment of every hour on CNN as a distraction. Look at the Democrats. Look what they did while fascism has a tight grip on the American government right now.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So there is also propaganda outlets that still exist, you know, Fox News. And we have Dr. Oz, who recently gave an interview because he now is the administrator for Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services because he was approved after being nominated by Donald Trump. Nightmare. And he gave his opinion on whether or not the Republican Party should be cutting these programs, should be targeting programs that benefit the working class.
But the Democrat messaging is very powerful, Dr. Oz. They go out there and they say this is a war on the poor. 8.6 million people, they say, are going to lose their health insurance. At the same time, the New York Post reporting that really what's happening here is just a slow in spend. It's not cutting spend as drastically as the Democrats make it seem to be, from 4.6% per year to 3.7%. So your take on what their message is and how you need to counter that.
Well, the message for me is a very simple one. In every scenario I have seen, and I've seen, I think, most of them, we are increasing the amount of money we are spending on Medicaid because we do have to support Americans who are most vulnerable. Great societies are judged by how they take care of people who are vulnerable amongst them. That stated, we have to make the program sustainable. We have to protect it. That's what the Republicans are trying to do. President Trump has said over and over again, publicly and privately, he wants to love and cherish these programs because he wants to love and cherish the people in them.
Yeah, so he's loving and cherishing the programs and loving and cherishing the people in the programs by supporting a $300 billion cut to SNAP, over $800 billion cut to Medicaid,
yeah.
And in order to pay for $1.1 trillion in tax cuts for people with incomes above $500,000. Because this is the same lie we always hear. We need to make sure that the program continues to last because we're running out of money. No, you're trying to pay for tax cuts for wealthy people.
Yeah, it's also, you could stop with the nonsense about Donald Trump cherishing and loving anything as he's disappearing people to foreign countries and trying to ship people to Sudan and Libya in Africa to prisons because they are here in a manner that doesn't please Donald Trump. Shut the fuck up. Donald Trump, who loves and reveres the flag because he molests it and rubs his crotch up against it, fuck straight off.
Yeah, I can hardly stand to watch the constant obsequiousness from people like Dr. Oz, like in the meeting that was held with the MAHA report. And I don't know, it's just every time there's a meeting with cabinet officials, it's so cult-like and disturbing, and I struggle to understand how these people can live with themselves. But, you know, one of the things that Donald Trump did back in February was he signed an executive order on IVF. And you remember he calls himself the fertilization president?
Yeah, because he doesn't know in vitro fertilization. Just not fertilization, fertilization.
He really does not know the full phrase. If you go and watch him talk about it, I've never heard him say in vitro fertilization. He only says fertilization.
Yeah.
But, you know, he talked about during the campaign that he was going to make IVF free and accessible to so that anyone who struggles with infertility would have access to IVF because it's very expensive. And so some people voted for him specifically because he made that promise, they say.
Right.
And so he signed an executive order.
And
back.
Listen, when has it ever gone wrong to believe something Donald Trump said? I mean, he said it. We got to hold him to it, right?
Yeah. And so back in February, he signed this executive order, but the executive order wasn't, you know, IVF is free now, obviously.
Yeah.
It had no actions, really. It was just that he was signing this executive order to request policy recommendations on how they could go about lowering the cost of IVF. And so NBC White House correspondent Yamiche Alcindor did a news package on where we're at with the Trump administration's complete inaction and dropping of the ball on any progress related to IVF.
Julie Eshelman and her husband first started fertility treatments in 2016.
We got pregnant, and then we got the news that we were moving.
Complicating Julie's journey, life as a military spouse. Each time her husband gets restationed, so does her medical care, including fertility specialists.
We had 3 weeks to sell our house, to pack up, and to move from Arizona to Illinois. And during that move, while we were driving cross country, we experienced our first miscarriage.
5 years of fertility treatments and multiple miscarriages later, Julie gave birth to a daughter.
How much did IVF end up costing your family?
I mean, I think the total number over, the last almost 9 years has probably been up towards $80,000.
Julie first began fertility treatments during President Trump's first term in office. She says she could not have imagined that his second term might be the determining factor in whether she decides to have a second child, all because of this campaign promise.
Under the Trump administration, we are going to be paying for that treatment.
And it was definitely something that was hopeful. Hearing presidential candidates talking about IVF, those things weren't happening 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Now she's watching closely to see what comes from President Trump's executive order on IVF, which requested policy recommendations on lowering costs and reducing barriers within 90 days. That 90-day deadline ending this week.
I'll be known as the fertilization president.
Despite calling for more babies, President Trump gutted the CDC branch responsible for reproductive health.
We don't know of anybody else at the CDC who has that level of knowledge or experience. They are now gone, and so they certainly cannot weigh in and provide any input on these policy recommendations.
Barbara Kalura is the president and CEO of Resolve, the National Infertility Alliance, which was not invited to meet with the White House.
We hear this from doctors every day. Oftentimes, they can't deliver the care that that patient needs because of financial concerns.
A spokesperson for the White House said in a statement, expanding IVF access for everyday Americans is a key priority for President Trump, adding the administration is in close coordination with outside stakeholder groups across the political spectrum to come up with a plan for IVF. Those groups include providers and benefit companies, as well as members of groups that have spoken out against IVF, like doctors from the Catholic Medical Association, who say IVF raises significant concerns, both medically and ethically. One group that did meet with White House officials was the Fertility Providers Alliance.
As exciting as the executive order was, it obviously, as you know, as you probably read it, doesn't have any actual actions in it.
FPA President TJ Farnsworth says they laid out a number of recommendations, like expanding training services for new doctors and funding more research into infertility, as well as addressing the politics around IVF.
There's sometimes a competing narrative of whether or not what we do in an IVF clinic and fertility services are congruent with pro-life movements, and so we wanted to make it clear to them from our perspective, we consider ourselves the definition of pro-life.
For Julie, the politics surrounding IVF are a deep cause for concern.
For me, actions speak louder than words, and the actions that have been taken so far don't really change the status quo.
The White House tells NBC News that after 90 days, the Domestic Policy Council has completed its recommendations and the president is reviewing them. Our thanks to Yamiche Alcindor for that report.
I'm sure he's reviewing them. He's reviewing them right now, you guys.
He's having Will Scharf, his nursemaid, read them to him.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that next first, let's just say that this is a way that people are going to be swayed. Personal impact.
Yeah.
They believed, some people, right, believed that they would have accessible IVF, and they voted for Donald Trump for that reason. And when that doesn't happen, they are going to question what is going on. And like she said at the end of that clip, actions speak louder than words. He hasn't followed through on that. And I know people listening to this are frustrated that someone would vote for him for that reason, or that they would need to be personally impacted by not being able to access something in order to not vote for him in the future or not support Republicans.
Frustrating for us too.
But it is indeed, for a lot of people, the way things work.
Well, so what happens is obviously, we'll just use this woman as an example. I don't know her or if this is true, but just to give you an example of it. So she is hyper-focused on IVF. And if she gets lied to about IVF, it's real for her. If she has nothing to do with Medicaid, it doesn't matter if he lied to millions of people about Medicaid because it doesn't impact her. But now that she's been lied to,
right,
her eyes open. Oh, shit. Trump's a fucking liar who's not going to follow through on the shit that he said. He just wanted to get elected, and then maybe it'll even open her eyes about him wanting to enrich himself.
Right. Exactly. So you mentioned Will, who you call Trump's nursemaid.
Yes.
And he's the guy who every time Donald Trump is signing an executive order, he calls Will over to explain the executive order. And I actually watched hours of Donald Trump signing executive orders. And this is constant. And this is not normal. This is not something that Joe Biden did. Like, I think people might think, no, this is just what they do. They have people explain the executive orders. No, they don't. And even ones that Donald Trump had already signed, there was one where he's at a podium at an event and he had already signed the executive orders. He stands to the side of the podium after calling Will up to explain the executive orders he had just signed.
Right. And we're not talking about complicated things either.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they're complicated to Trump, but this is an example. This is the most recent set of executive orders that Trump was signing, and you can tell he needs Will to explain it. And then he also, at the end, asks, is that all? Is that all we're doing? Are we done here today?
Right. Can I finally go home?
Yeah.
The purpose of this executive order is to recenter policymaking around gold standard science, scientific efforts that have followed appropriate scientific methods that don't include those sorts of conflicts of interest, and to ensure that when departments and agencies are relying on scientific studies to promulgate rules, to promulgate regulations, that the science that they're relying on is highly reliable and available to the public.
He did a very good job, didn't he?
He did.
How many people here could have done that? I don't know. I think a lot.
What?
Okay, good job, Will.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Is that it?
That's all we have for you now, sir.
So, paging Jake Tapper.
Yeah.
Paging Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson.
For these brilliant people, they are brilliant people.
I love also that he said, how many people could have done that? I think a lot.
Yeah.
There's nothing fucking special about my nursemaid.
Again, paging Jake Tapper, is he worried about this? Is he worried about how Donald Trump cannot explain the executive orders he's signing, that he doesn't know how many he's signing that day, that he doesn't know if this is the final one that they're signing, that he doesn't know what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I think Jake Tapper is probably typing furiously at his laptop right now, penning the new book about it, right?
Yeah.
Fucking awkward.
So another concerning element that I think is
another what?
Concerning element. I still haven't recovered from the crying. My nose is leaking. So I also recently discovered I have allergies all of a sudden, which is really nice. So RFK, you know, the reason they're signing that gold standard science, let's just start there, is because
it's gold.
Yeah, because we have now an administration that is stocked with anti-science, anti-vaccine, conspiracy theorists. And it's very scary. It's very dangerous. What is happening at HHS, what's happening at the FDA. And one example of this is that RFK actually recently told the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions to do a that he asked the FDA director to do a complete review on mifepristone, the abortion pill.
Yeah.
And so we've long talked about this, that they're going to be going after the abortion pill as the next kind of front to eliminate access to abortion. And the reason that RFK asked the FDA director to do a complete review on the safety of mifepristone is because there's this new report that's making the rounds that was actually published by just a straight up anti-abortion group. And they say that the report illustrates dangers from taking the pill. And RFK is saying that because of this report, it should, the label should be changed on mifepristone. So they're talking about this one singular report that should change the way that mifepristone is accessed in this country. And we've talked about this too, but mifepristone is safe. Mifepristone, misoprostol, these are safe medications. The abortion pill is safe. As of 2024, more than 7.5 million people have used medication abortion pills. They are safer than penicillin. They're safer than Viagra. The actual research shows that there have been 32 deaths out of approximately 5.9 million people. But these deaths are not necessarily causally attributed to the use of mifepristone. Yeah. They're just deaths that took place when someone had used the medication.
Sure.
And so they're not necessarily causally linked, but they have to be reported.
Yeah, well, they die with it in their system, not from it being in their system.
And so it's categorized as an adverse event. But there's so many issues with this report. I mean, it's self-published. It's not peer-reviewed. They claim that 11% of patients experienced what they call an SAE, a serious adverse event, after abortion. But the things that they counted as serious adverse events were like a visit to an emergency room. But going to the emergency room after a medication abortion, that can be for many different reasons.
Sure.
You could be like inquiring if your experience that you're having is supposed to be happening. You could just be asking questions. You could be wanting to make sure you're not pregnant, wanting to make sure that it worked. You could be having some symptoms that you're worried about. Like, it wouldn't necessarily be an automatic serious adverse event. So they also in the report indicate that part of the serious adverse events are patients needing additional medications or a follow-up procedure to complete their abortion. But it's actually an expected part that like 3-5% of people will need that. So
yeah,
that's not a serious adverse event. So this is a propaganda report from an anti-abortion organization. One report that goes against the volume of research that we have that shows that these are safe medications in order to curb access to this medication. And it's really scary because we thought this would happen. And it seems like, you know, RFK is doing what he is told. And who knows what he actually believes on this issue? I don't think it matters.
Does not matter.
He's a tool of the administration who is obviously carrying out orders that were laid out in Project 2025. Now, thankfully, even though we haven't been hearing a lot about this, there was a recent...
Can I say this real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Also, I want you to keep in mind that those numbers that Brittany just said, that millions and millions and millions and millions of people have taken mifepristone. 32 deaths. 32 out of millions and millions and millions. Gun death is the chief cause of death for children and teens in this country, and there is no action being taken to try to curtail gun ownership and the slaughter, the piles and piles of dead children in our society.
Mm-hmm.
They have no priority. They have no moral authority here. What the fuck soever.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's, I just wanted to say that.
No, I mean, I'm glad that you did. That's a really important point. But like I said, this is kind of flying under the radar a bit just because there's five alarm fires every hour. And there was a recent moment in a Senate Appropriations Committee hearing where Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, was questioning the new FDA commissioner, Martin McCary, on this specific report and on the administration's plans to go after the abortion pill.
Okay, so if a study came out saying that people who took a certain medication experienced a certain rate of, quote, serious adverse events, but the study's authors refused to say what they were counting as an adverse event, would that raise serious questions for you about the study's validity?
Yes, Senator. So I have the natural inquisition of a scientist that's done a lot of research. So I would want to see the underlying data. Yes.
Okay. Well, I am, of course, talking about the sham study from the Ethics and Public Policy Center. It's an anti-abortion group. It's bankrolled by extremists. They fought to overturn Roe v. Wade. And this study, if you can call it that, is unsound and has been widely panned by medical experts. But days after its release, you and Secretary Kennedy are now suggesting that we need a, quote, complete review on the safety of mifepristone. Now, to be clear, mifepristone has been proven safe and effective in more than 100 studies over three decades. And the people that are now pushing that bogus study and saying that mifepristone is dangerous for women are the exact same people who think that abortion is never necessary to save a woman's life and that 10-year-olds should somehow be forced into childbirth. I believe that this administration is laying the groundwork to rip away access to medication abortion across the country. This has not gotten enough attention. And I know you'd prefer to keep it that way, but I want you to know I'm not going to let that happen.
I have not seen that study, Senator, and you have not seen that study. Well, so actually, how can you call it a sham, bogus study? Neither of us have seen the study, the underlying data, or the methodology.
Actually, that's not true. But I will say this, Mr. Chairman, we have a lot of differences here. I know you were came before this committee to present your side of the story, but I am very clear that laying off people, cutting budgets, is not going to improve the safety and efficacy that we count on when we go to the drugstore to get our drugs. And I know that sham studies that try to prove a point that came from a political group is not going to tell the public that they can count on the medications they count on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
And this is why we talk about scientific consensus. You heard him get defensive. You heard him say, well, I haven't looked at the methodology of this. You haven't looked at it.
Yet
so we don't know.
Yet he's defending it.
Right. He's defending it. His knee-jerk reaction is to defend it rather than the volume of research that we have shows that it is safe. So it's strange that there's this report that's out that days after its publication, it's an anti-abortion group. It's not peer-reviewed. Days after its publication, RFK is suddenly like, oh, here we go. We have this new report. It's unsafe. We got to do a review.
Well, also, if he really was just open-minded about it, he'd be like, well, you say it's a sham study. Yeah, I'm eager since I don't know the methodology. I don't know the underlying data. I want to see that.
Right.
I will for sure make a determination on whether I think it's a sham. Instead, he's like, you don't know if it's a sham. You don't fucking know.
Right.
He's showing his bias.
Again, and these
showing his ass, Brittany.
These are people that I'm so enraged hearing them talk about gold standard research.
Yeah.
You guys are conspiracy theorists. You're zealots. You're activists. You're anti-vaccine activists. You are scary people. And you know nothing. You know nothing because you're activists. So stop talking about it. You're enraging me and making my allergies.
This other Donald Trump expert wants to sound off.
Donald Trump, baby!
All right, well...
Wait, one more Donald Trump expert wants to sound off.
She's not a Christian!
Maybe more appropriate.
Okay, so there's... People have been looking for...
She's dark-sided! She's dark-sided! Why don't we have a dark-sided clip?
We need a dark-sided clip. So so I don't have to hear you do that again. So... Through the funding cuts, the federal funding cuts, there has been a drastic impact on food banks. And a lot of people have been looking for like practical ways that they can get involved in their communities, that they can help other people.
It is really just an all-out assault on the poorest, most vulnerable people in our country. Not unsurprising, but wild nonetheless.
Yeah, and listen, charity groups cannot fulfill the need here without federal funding.
Yeah.
They just can't. I mean, we're going to try. Everyone's going to try. The food banks are going to continue to do what they can. But without the millions of dollars in funding, it's going to be really hard times. And so if you are someone who's looking for an opportunity to volunteer, get involved in your community, maybe give back, I think going to your local food bank is a really great way to do that. They could use people volunteering. They could use people donating regularly. So think about that while you're listening to this news package about those federal funding cuts and how they are harming food banks.
Before sunrise, workers at Feeding South Florida move, load, and stack pallets of food and household goods onto trucks. With the help of volunteers, this flurry of activity has allowed the organization to distribute food to 1.2 million people throughout four Florida counties. People like Rosalind Budget, who lives on a fixed income and comes here every 2 months.
I'm able to get a balanced meal in on a daily basis, you know.
And if you didn't have this, what would happen?
I probably would starve.
But the aid she relies on has been reduced. The Department of Government Efficiency cut funding for about $1 billion worth of USDA programs. For Feeding South Florida, the cuts amount to 40% of its $37 million annual budget.
You're already seeing empty shelves, essentially.
We've been seeing empty racks since February. These cuts have really made an impact, not just on our ability to serve, but on the family's ability to thrive in South Florida and across the country.
Paco Velez is CEO of Feeding South Florida.
It's an unfortunate situation because we see that our families are desperate. They're coming in more frequently than they ever have, and we're trying to maintain as much food as we can, but there is a little desperation.
The line of cars for weekly food distribution at Ebenezer Church in South Miami has only gotten longer over the years.
We have sweet potato, we have onions, and everything is fresh.
Pastor Roberto Blanco, who gets part of the supply from the warehouse, is working with less.
Si recibimos menos, entonces damos menos cantidad.
So if you get less food, you have to give them a smaller supply.
Porque el propósito es que cada familia lleve algo.
So they at least can have something. Yeah.
It's affecting farmers, too. East Coast Farm and Vegetables near Parkland, Florida, partnered with Feeding South Florida, using federal dollars to pick and pack surplus produce destined for families in need.
This program is a great use of our tax dollars. We are not only helping our farmers here in the States, but you're also feeding families.
Without the funds to process the produce, farmers are hoping crops won't go to waste.
We know that the end goal is to feed people, and we need to work towards that goal.
The goal of reaching those most in need. Manuel Bojorquez, CBS News, Miami.
So, like I said, it's an important way, if you can, to support your community very directly, and they need it. They need it bad. And like we've been saying, I mean, it's going to be tough times here, and I'm hoping that in the midst of all of it, you're finding ways to connect with other people. And, you know, if you're not in a position to give back, don't feel guilty about that. You know, if you are someone who's relying on a food bank, don't feel guilty about not being able to donate or give of your time. You know, if you're someone who's just trying to survive, you're just trying to survive.
Yeah, well, that's what community is all about, is those who can helping those who can't.
Right.
And, you know, help lift those people who can't up to a position where they can. It's what everything should be about here.
Right. So we could have ended as that with Taking Care of Biz, but we're actually going to end here with Taking Care of Biz. Taking Care of Biz. Annalise Feldman is Taking Care of Biz, and she is a freshman at Yarmouth?
I think it's Yarmouth.
Everything's fine. Yarmouth High School in Southern Maine. And she finished second to Soren Stark Chessa, a multi-sport standout at Rival North Yarmouth Academy.
Are you sure everything's okay?
At a May 2nd intramural meet. This is according to Common Dreams. And what happened here is that Annalise Feldman finished second to a transgender competitor at a track meet. And a Republican state lawmaker has used this as a weapon against the trans community.
Of course.
Using Annalise Feldman coming in second to weaponize hatred against the trans community. But Annalise Feldman, who came in second, who's a freshman at Yarmouth High School in Southern Maine, decided to write a letter to the editor speaking directly to this lawmaker. So I'm going to read this letter.
Oh, yeah.
Rep. Laurel Libby, Republican, Auburn, recently used my second place finish in the 1600 meter run and that of my teammate in the 800 meter run to malign Soren Stark Chessa, the trans-identified athlete who finished first. One of the reasons I chose to run cross country and track is the community. Teammates cheering each other on. I swear to God. I'm so annoyed. I don't want this to happen again.
Let it out, Brittany.
No, I'm not going to let it out. I'm not letting it out. This is not part of the letter, by the way. All right. Teammates cheering each other on, athletes from different schools coming together, and the fact that personal improvement is valued as much as, if not more than, the place we finish. Last Friday, I ran the fastest 1,600-meter race I have ever run in middle school or high school track and earned varsity status by my school's standards. I am extremely proud of the effort I put into the race and the time that I achieved. The fact that someone else finished in front of me didn't diminish the happiness I felt after finishing that race. I don't feel like first place was taken from me. Instead, I feel like a happy day was turned ugly by a bully who is using children to make political points. We are all just kids trying to make our way through high school. Participating in sports is the highlight of high school for some kids. No one was harmed by Soren's participation in the girls' track meet, but we are all harmed by the hateful rhetoric of bullies like Rep. Libby, who wants to take sports away from kids just because of who they are.
Wow. Nothing was harmed except for what that woman's doing, that representative, that Republican in Maine.
Right. So this is remarkable. I mean, for all that we hear about trans athletes and competition, we don't often hear from the kids.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is a really powerful letter to have a freshman in high school say, you know what, you, Laurel Libby in your 40s.
Yeah, stay in your fucking lane, lady.
Yeah, stop using my story.
Yeah.
And this is something I find so strange about politicians, is that they like hear someone's personal anecdote that wasn't given to them to use.
And
for
they
political
weaponize it.
Yeah, like that wasn't given to you. That's not your story to tell. You don't know how this person feels about that. So I'm hoping that because Annalise Feldman chose to write this, that Laurel Libby will receive the message and stop using this story in whatever anecdotes she's trying to tell to amplify hatred against the trans community.
Well, it's also trying to make a name for herself, the representative Libby, because of the fact that it's a hot button issue in Maine right now because of what the governor of Maine did.
Right.
Janet Mills, in standing up to Donald Trump and winning in court, by the way, about federal funding and the threat to withhold it over the trans athletes issue.
Right.
So
taking care of biz.
Taking care of biz for sure.
Taking care of biz, Annalise Feldman. And thank you for having me finish the show with crying as well.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just got to lean into it, Brittany Page.
All right.
Hey, listen, we love you and appreciate you. Thank you for joining us today, episode 947. If you'd like to help support the work, if you'd like to help produce this show for $2 a month, you could do just that. Go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. We'd love to hear from you on these issues or anything else you feel is important. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email us, IDoubtIt@Dollamore.com. We will see you next time. We love and appreciate you. We are in perpetual wonder about the community that is built up around this show. And it makes us very happy, and we hope it does you too. We'll see you next time. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt.
Memorial Day doorbuster deals are here at Lowe's. Right now, rewards members save $80 on the Master Forge 4-burner gas grill, now just $149. Plus, rewards members save $900 on the Lowe's exclusive Hisense French door refrigerator, now only $999. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Programs subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.